Brew Strong is brought to you by morebeer.com, where a man can brew like a man.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hey, I'm John Palmer, and you're not.
that one doesn't work.
Okay.
You're not Chevy Chase.
That's true. Shorter.
I could see you in something like, you know, National Lampoon.
Poon.
Pacheco Vacation or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There's the title.
Pacheco Vacation. You could say it was hell. It was like a Pacheco Vacation.
Yeah, it's true.
It stank like a Pacheco Vacation.
I like it.
I got a rash like I haven't seen since my last Pacheco Vacation.
Yeah. It's all those listeners that came out for BNA 4. They were on a Pacheco Vacation.
Yep.
So how you guys doing?
Fine. How are you, John?
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for all our audience knows, it's been 2 weeks since, you know, we last talked.
That's right. Rather than 5 minutes. Yeah. That's what's so funny. And, you know, I got nothing. Usually, you know, we have a little chit chat, talk about something.
Yeah.
And I got nothing. I got nothing other than, you know, if you get a chance, go visit our sponsor, morebeer.com.
Bunch of good guys up there.
Good guys, good products, good prices, good customer service. You know, I've been dealing with them for a long time, since I started out in brewing, and they've always amazed me at their passion for brewing and really taking it to the next level. Not just doing the basics. They want to, not that they think anybody needs to do more than that, but they really want to know everything and have every possible piece of technical hoo-ha, and
they like to keep the hobby fun.
Yeah, they do a lot of interesting stuff there. So if you appreciate that and you appreciate them sponsoring this show, even if you're not going to buy anything from there, you ought to email them and say, hey, you guys are More Beer, I really appreciate you sponsoring Brew Strong, keeping the Brewing Network going, and let them know that you hear the show, and it's worthwhile for them to sponsor it. If you send those emails, and trust me, they'll see that, and they'll feel it's they're getting their money's worth. So make sure you let them know that you enjoy that, and while you're there, you know, see if you can pick something up. They got a lot of good products, and speaking of a lot of good products, swing by the Brewing Network store. It also helps keep the Brewing Network going. A lot of good stuff there, and other ways you can donate. There's the recurring donation button on the main page there, and that's gonna, you know, as little as $2 a month, you can enter in these great drawings, and all that goes to the Brewing Network bottom line, and really makes a big difference. So if you can see your way to that, that helps a lot. And let's throw them all out here. How about Facebook? You can find the Brewing Network on Facebook. You can find myself, Jamil Zainashev, on Facebook. You can find John Palmer on Facebook.
Yep.
Matter of fact, you can find all the Brewing Network cast on Facebook. And go ahead. Hit them up. You know, send the friend request. Don't worry, we won't reject you. No worries on that. We love to communicate with everybody out there that listens. It's a lot of you folks, and whatever we can do to help open the channels of communication.
Yep, that's how I kept in touch with everybody during the JBF, you know, checked out the pictures that people were posting. And,
right. And your fire. We didn't talk about your fire coming up to your house and then you bailing out, running screaming to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Oh, get me out of here. I got to go to the happiest place on earth. I can't take it.
Yeah. Well, I had a call.
It was just for the kids. I know. It wasn't for you. You were very manly and willing to burn to death.
Disneyland, yeah.
You were going to stand there and burn to death rather than abandon your homestead.
That's right.
But you figured out for the
roof,
kids.
Hose.
And when the hose ran out,
then
you whip out the backup hose.
And get more hose.
Whip out the neighbor's hose. Yes.
That's right. Speaking of hoses.
I had a bail on the San Antonio guys that weekend, unfortunately.
Oh.
Poor timing on the fire's part.
Right. No, they had asked me, and I couldn't because of the family commitments. And you got the fire, and that's
next
tough.
Next year.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Yep. Next year, if they're willing to do it, why don't both of us go?
That'd be fun. Yeah.
We'll both go. Yeah, we could share a room. You and I share a room, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, that'll cut down on their expenses, and if they're interested, they can have us both out. Well, it just needs to get set up a little earlier for me. It was a little too late for me to be able to change things family-wise. But,
I was really looking forward to going. I mean, I had
San Antonio,
it on my calendar.
It's a beautiful town, lots of great people. And, let's go out there. Let's make it a date. So if they're listening, of course, they have to listen. If they don't listen to the show, then they're out of luck. We're not going to be there. But if they listen, they can hold us to it, huh?
Yep.
You and I, we'll both go. San Antonio, here we come. So
all right.
Set us up for next year. And both of us apologize for this year. Speaking of apologies, factors affecting mash efficiency. So we got an interesting question about mash efficiency for this show. Justin.
Hey there, Jamil and John. This is Biz up in Orono, Maine. My question for you guys is basically about efficiency. I've been having problems, been hitting around 60% efficiency. I just kind of want to know what should we be shooting for efficiency, and how should we be getting there? I submitted some fixes onto the forum there about my MLT. I think I found the problem, but if you guys take a look at that, that'd be great. Help me out. All right, thanks.
All right. So it's an interesting question because everybody's focused on efficiency. And, 60% might be a little low, but,
excuse me.
Nice one, John. 60 might be a little low, but why don't we talk about efficiency? As we always do, let's start off with a definition of what we're going to talk about. John, explain to me what is mash efficiency.
Okay, mash efficiency is calculating the percent of what you extract from your grain versus the maximum that they get from the grain in a laboratory condition. So in a laboratory, if they grind up the grain to powder, they lauter it thoroughly, basically in coffee filters and into a funnel, and they'll get 80%, about 80% by weight, soluble extract. Now that includes both sugars, other unfermentable dextrins, proteins, polyphenols. I mean, it's everything soluble in that malt coming out in this, getting in solution and being collected. So, and they measure what's left over, and it's a little less than 20%. So that's the maximum that you can get. And when you scale that to sucrose or white table sugar, that works out to a gravity of about 37 points per pound per gallon, or I think it's like 315 liter degrees per kilogram. So if you ratio you know, what your extraction was, how many points, gravity points you extracted from, you know, your grain bill. And then let's say you get 28 points per pound per gallon.
Mm-hmm. That you're works comparing out to, that 28 to that 37.
Right. So, and that's about 75% efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting 60, then you're getting 60% of 37.
Mm-hmm. So the maximum points per gallon, 37. It depends on the grain, right?
Yep,
different grains have different extract potential.
Right.
Dark kilned malts tend to have lower, lighter kilned, and the base malts tend to have higher, and they tend to vary based on certain factors. But 37 is probably a pretty good estimate, 38, 36,
right
around there for those base malts, and you'll get a percentage of that. And that's what you're talking about, right? That's
right.
The efficiency?
That's, yeah, what they get in the laboratory conditions versus mm-hmm. what you get in, you know, in kind of real world brewing conditions.
So if the potential extract for a grain was 37 points per gallon.
Pound
per gallon, PPPG. Mm-hmm. And I was to get 100% efficiency, just let's say, then I would get 37 points per pound per gallon.
Yeah.
That's what I would end up with.
Yeah. By mashing 1 pound, mashing and lautering 1 pound of grain to create 1 gallon of wort, that wort would have a gravity of 1037.
Right. Okay, and that would be 100%. But that's unrealistic. And I see people claiming they're getting 100-something percent, and that you're measuring wrong, right?
Yeah,
people do it after they've boiled and the other things, or they're not measuring the volume right, or various things, because you can't get over 100%. If you think that you can beat a Congress mash, I don't think so. Maybe you could. I don't know. Not like 110%. Yeah, I calculated 110%. All right, so that's what you're talking about with efficiency. Now, why does efficiency matter at all?
Well, it's a matter of economics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're brewing professionally and you're getting, you know, less efficiency than what you had planned on, your beer is going to be a lower gravity than you anticipated. You know. Which may be a customer quality issue, perception of quality issue. And, you know, if you have to mash more, you know, use more grain per batch to make up for a lack of efficiency, you know, that's wasted money. So for a professional brewer, efficiency is very important.
Mm-hmm.
For a home brewer, it is not as critical. I mean, it makes the difference between a, you know, a grain bill costing you $15 versus $17, perhaps, for your grain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not that big a difference.
Well, what about beer quality? Does efficiency affect beer quality at all?
Yeah, if you really, you know, go for, I mean, if you ever taste a Congress mash, it doesn't taste very good. It tends to be an astringent, very husky, grainy kind of wort. If you shoot for, say, 90 or 95% efficiency on your brews, you're going to tend to taste some of that character where you're getting more of the grain husk flavor being extracted because you're getting, you know, all these extra solutes out of the grain.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're going for a lower efficiency, say 70 to 80%, you're going to leave them behind. You're just going to extract the sugars and you'll get a much cleaner and fuller bodied, you know, beer out of a 70 to 80% efficiency wort than you would if from one that you'd strive for 90%.
So lower efficiency isn't necessarily a problem other than cost effectiveness.
Right. Now, another aspect of poor efficiency, and let's look at, say, 60% here.
Mm-hmm.
It should be pretty easy to get 75% efficiency out of most, you know, cooler mash lauter tun systems.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting less, I would, you know, you run the risk of having something else going wrong in that process, where maybe you're not collecting from the entire grain bed.
Mm-hmm.
as you're clicking the wort. Maybe you're over rinsing an area versus under rinsing others.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could be, you could end up suffering from poor wort quality at 60%, not because of the, what was I trying to say?
Not you, because you, of the poor mash
conditions.
It's really because you're channeling your sparge water through the grain, and you're not and you're just rinsing the daylights out of one little section.
Yeah, I guess where I was going to go is
extracting tannins and
polyphenols. You and I talk about 70 to 75% being really a good area to shoot for when you're doing an all grain beer, because that results in a really rich tasting wort. You got a full body, you've got rich flavors, you've extracted sugars and left a lot of the harsher stuff behind.
Right.
But if you're seeing a 60%, chances are that 60% also represents poor lautering or poor conversion, which may affect your efficiency as well.
Right.
In your wort quality.
Well, and anything from 65 to 80, in that range is absolutely fine. I think it's, you know, and when we do the BYO columns and provide recipes for that, they insist on 65% efficiency as how the recipes are written. And, you know, because that's a fairly common number. So if you're at 60, I don't think you're very far off. If you're at 65, that's fine. I don't think you have to be at 70. I think 70 is a sweet spot for me, so I target that. Sometimes I end up at 75 as well.
It depends on your system, too.
Yeah, it depends on a lot of factors. Well, the interesting thing is, all right, so you know how the interweb is, and there's you and I both have a few people out there that just love to they just love to try and nitpick anything that we produce. You know these guys, right? And they've got, oh, you know, my gosh. So we did a show on sparging. That's right.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole thing about, well, you know, hey, you know, and one of the comments was, since we're talking about efficiency, I don't agree that we should blindly settle for 70% efficiency. Know where and why you are losing efficiency. If it's because you crush coarse to get better runoff or don't have a choice, it's okay. But low efficiency can also be the sign of suboptimal mashing parameters, and improving them can improve your efficiency in your beer. Well, you know, a lot of those mash parameters really don't have a major impact on mash efficiency. It's mainly your crush, and your sparging, right? That's the pretty much the whole ball of wax. You know, how fast you sparge, how you sparge, techniques like that. I mean, the rinsing of the sugars is really the big part of that, and also your crush, and you know, pH and all these other things, and temperature and recirculation, they've got some impact, but it's not major impact like that. So you're not going to, you know, and, you know, to think somebody at 70%, probably everything's fine. They're not really screwed up one way or another. So.
Right. I agree. You can get too pedantic in this and get too deep into it, but, a good way to talk about this topic is to talk about, there's really two aspects. There's a biochemical aspect where you're talking about in the efficiency of enzyme conversion, and that's where you get into mash chemistry, water chemistry, pH, temperature rests, the amount of time you spend at those rests, and so on, where you're trying to, you know, optimize the enzymatic conversion of the starches. So that's one aspect. And brewing, you know, thank God, is really forgiving. It's really a robust process. It, you know, a lot of you know, experts will tell you that malt wants to become beer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really does almost convert itself despite what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But you can optimize it, and we've had shows on that, the water chemistry shows and other shows where we talk about this. And that's a little bit what we're going to talk about today is what are the handles, what are the factors you can use to improve your conversion
mm-hmm.
to aid efficiency. And then there's the other aspect of mash efficiency, and it's a physical aspect, and that is the rinsing of the sugars and the collection, the separation of the wort from the grain bed and extracting that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really big area. So as you're saying, Jamil, you can kind of take the biochemical aspect for granted to a large extent, and, you know, single temperature infusion mash, just let it sit there and then drain it, and you're going to get, you know, pretty decent efficiency.
You got to be hitting 70% easy. I mean, as long as you got a okay crush and you can batch sparge and all that. We'll get into batch sparging and all that as well.
Yeah.
But let's do this. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get deep into kind of the mechanics and everything about that. Back after this.
Smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Regan, I am so excited to be going to Oktoberfest for the first time. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, no problem, dude. But it's Oktoberfest.
Ah. I better brush up on my germ. Regan, this isn't the airport.
You can fly, drive, walk, or click, mein Freund. There's all kinds of ways to get to Oktoberfest.
Regan, we're in the middle of an oak forest. I swear, if I hear a banjo, I'm out of here.
We're about to tap my barrel.
Yeah, bros!
It's a party all month long at morebeer.com. Come join Oktoberfest for leader swilling deals on all things oak. Oak barrels, oak cubes, oak chips, beer kits with oak in them, oak infusion tubes, and the new VacuBrew system, all with the best prices they've ever offered. It's Oktoberfest, only at morebeer.com all October long.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Catherine the Great Imperial Stout, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and happy hour all day Mondays. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. And Seven Bridges has the best selection in the world. Everything is a click away at breworganic.com. Join the mailing list for special deals and regular updates about new products and specials. They have been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for almost 12 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. Take the National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Enter the competition by October 10th for your chance to win great prizes, including a hands-on brewing experience at an organic brewery, brewing equipment, or organic brewing ingredients. Complete details about the competition are online at breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to worker and people-friendly business practices and environmentally friendly, worker-friendly brewing products whenever possible. Visit today, breworganic.com.
Hilo, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two?
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby!
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer
into beer.
This is Brew Strong.
We're back. All right, so the biochemical, you got the temperature, you've got other factors such as having appropriate amount of minerals in the brewing liquor.
pH. Yeah, your water chemistry, the pH of the mash,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The best temperature for the enzymes to be working at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
there's a wide range of possibilities there that all are going to work, and efficiency is going to be in that sweet spot. Unless you're doing something really stupid, it's okay.
Too hot, too cold.
But. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be excessively hot, excessively cold. You'd have to be way off on your pH. You'd have to, you have to be totally, out there on something like that. Otherwise, you're going to fall in that range. Minerals. Don't be doing it with distilled water.
Right. It'll work with distilled water, but it's better if you use ordinary tap water. Or you need for best results, you need like at least 50 parts per million of calcium in the mash.
Right.
And most municipal supplies have somewhere in the order of 20 to 70.
Okay.
So it's ballpark.
Yeah. Any water. You got a lot of flexibility. So that's really not the problem that Biz is having. I mean, somebody says, I got 60%, even 50% efficiency. What's my problem? I don't go to any of those mash parameters first. I go off. You might ask them, hey, all right, tell me what you're doing. And they may tell you about that. And that's fine. But it's probably more related to something of the physical nature, right? It's either the particle size, your crush, or it's how you're getting the sugars out of the mash tun,
right?
Give me an education here on the crush first, how you'd think you could almost throw in the whole grain. I mean, why, it's all in there. The water gets in there, right? And why does crushing it different matter as far as efficiency goes?
Well, the crush or the particle size has a foot in both arenas, both the biochemical and the physical. And you can make beer with uncrushed grain, and you'll get about 60% efficiency. But the key to that is you got to give enough time, time for the enzymes to diffuse into that grain, and time for the sugars to diffuse out of the grain.
All right, somebody's gonna wonder how much time, how long would it take?
All day.
You know? Okay. So if I was to hold a mash with whole grains overnight, I could sparge that and still get about 60%.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably the way they did it, 5,000 years ago.
Didn't have roller mills.
Yeah.
They had a stone, I guess. They'd take a rock between
two
rocks.
They probably just had it, had it all sitting there in the pot or the clay pot, and it rained and it filled with water. And the next day they took a look at it and tasted it, and it's like, that's pretty good.
Bruce.
Yeah. But, it will convert. It's just not optimized. So the particle size, the first thing it does is it allows the enzymes to have better access to the starches. Now, in the husk or in the grain, the starches are really not soluble. they're not very accessible. So the first step of a mash is to get the grain, get the starches solubilized, or get them to dissolve into the water. And there really is a minimum temperature for that, and it's about 140, 145 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 degrees C. It will happen below that temperature, but only partially. You got to get above that temperature, 65 degrees C, 145 Fahrenheit, for the starches to actually dissolve into the water, and that allows the enzymes to access them and mm-hmm. start the conversion of starch to sugar.
Well, and when they have the specs on malt, they'll show the amount of time it takes for something to essentially convert. And mm-hmm. on some of these malts, it's like 0 minutes, essentially.
Right.
But that's, again, with the Congress mash, where you're
right.
grinding this thing to a powder, and the water is easily, the temperature is optimal, and the water is solubilizing the starches, and conversion happens very quickly.
Right.
The larger the particle, the longer it takes, right? Like you're saying,
that's
if
right.
it's a whole grain, it's going to take overnight. But,
right.
All right.
Yeah. So, there is a trade-off, and this is one area to look for when you're, worrying about efficiency, is your crush fine enough for the amount of time that you're giving it to mash? If you have a very coarse grind and you mash for half an hour, 45 minutes, there may not be enough time for those starches to get soluble and for the enzymes to get access to them. And you may only end up extracting, 50% of the weight of the grain in the mash. The rest of it is still dry, basically. It hasn't gotten wet yet. It has the enzymes can't get to the starches. So a coarse grind can help with lauterability. It's very easy to drain that mash and easy to stir the mash, and you got good temperature uniformity throughout it. But it takes extra time for the enzymes to get access and convert those starches. The smaller you crush it, the faster that can happen. So when we talk about the degree of crush, we're looking for an average particle size that's pretty small, something on the order of not flour, certainly, but like when you're grinding coffee. Mm-hmm. If you open a can of, the big can of Hills Brothers or Maxwell House, or where the particle size is about 1/16 of an inch or bigger, that's a coarse grind.
Mm-hmm.
You go smaller down to the drip coffee grinds that you get out of the grinding things in the mm-hmm. grocery store. That's probably the average particle size that we're looking for.
Right.
But we want a distribution. We want some of the fines. We want some of the coarse, mm-hmm. because that aids lauterability.
Right.
The fines will convert very quickly. The larger particles will take longer. And that's why we generally say to mash for an hour.
Right.
Yeah, you can get conversion done in 20 minutes if you got fine particle sizes.
Mm-hmm.
But extracting the wort from that finely ground mash that's converted in 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
will be more difficult. So it's always a balance, always a trade-off of different factors here.
One of the things that I find important is, and I always refer to the crush, because you want to avoid, and the reason we crush instead of technically grinding the malts is to preserve those husks. So, and that's why a lot of times they'll wet mill malt, because it actually keeps the husks intact. You can wet mill a malt. They spray down with water. They moisten those husk surfaces, and when it goes through the mill, they stay intact, and you can actually crush the endosperm inside up into small particles, and the husk remains intact, and that acts as your filter bed. But it doesn't, you want to minimize the exposing more of that surface area of that husk, which gives you those tannins, that astringency,
right.
and that husky, grainy kind of character to it. So that's why I'm you know, one for a you know, a much gentler crush and you know, a larger particle size, and I just take my time, and things seem to work out well, and I keep those husks intact as much as possible. You were saying earlier, you know, when they grind the malt to a powder to do those Congress mashes, they're grinding up that husk material and it ends up real tannic and not a very pleasant thing, you were saying.
That's right.
So there's a trade-off there between, you know, one and the other. Let me go back to the interweb here, and one of the things they were talking about, let's see here. They were talking about the crush. And one of the reasons why fly versus batch sparging efficiency. We're saying that fly sparging is going to be the most efficient. And, of course, they got all the batch sparging proponents to, up in a wad,
yeah.
And I mean, there's nothing wrong with batch sparging. Go ahead, do it. I think it's probably better for most people to batch sparge, but I mean, I just don't do it anymore because I got an easier way to fly sparge. Commonly looked at, fly sparging generally requires a coarser, and I just don't believe this to be true. One thing that commonly overlooked is that fly sparging generally requires a coarser crush than batch sparging because its sensitivity to channeling and ease of flow through the grain bed. This leads to the argument that batch spargers are often able to work with a finer crush which requires less intensive mashing and may easily yield a more complete conversion. That in turn can offset any lauder efficiency disadvantage that batch sparging has over fly sparging and give batch sparging an edge over fly sparging. I know this is more fuel to the fire, but I feel like... I think a
very fine crush is going to hurt you in batch sparging because you're attempting to drain all the wort out of
right.
the grain bed.
Right, and it's just going to get bound up.
Yeah, the finer your crush, the more liquid that grain bed's going to retain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to, you know, and trying to drain all the liquid out, it's just going to suck that grain bed right down.
Right. I think you can do about the same on both. Well, and, you know, a lot of these folks, they are, you know, armchair quarterback in here, or, you know, they haven't really necessarily done the science. They're supposing and, you know, coming up with all these things. But when I first met you, you were running tests using aquariums and blue dye.
Yeah.
And all sorts of manifolds and false bottoms, and I mean, you were doing the science. You were actually doing the laboratory work, so you could fully understand what you're talking about. So you weren't, you're not speaking out of your ass. You actually know what you're talking about on this. So
yeah,
when these guys come and say, "Oh, well, you know, it's this, that, and the other thing," I can say, "Well, I'm going to go with John the Rock Palmer here, who's done the science and actually has some ideas to what's happening with the flow and all these things." So, you know, and unless you guys want to do the science too, you know, I'm sticking with my man here. On he knows what he's talking about on this. So, all right, so I'm getting off track here, but I find that a little frustrating at times that people will. You know, on the interweb, people can throw stuff out there and not really back it up with some science. So,
I mean, like they say, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
And I have the least of all, so I'm very dangerous.
But, I mean, you know, all of these things are a factor. But you do kind of have to do the experiments and watch several trials so you can get an idea of which factors are more, you know, important than others.
Right. I would say for... a lot of brewers, batch sparging probably is a better method, unless, you know, if you're worried about fly sparging and getting channeling and having an appropriate manifold, or you don't have a false bottom, something like that, you know, go with batch sparging. There's nothing wrong with batch sparging at all. For me, it's extra work to batch sparge, so I fly sparge because it's easier. You know, I'm all set up. You know, flip the switch on the pump, and I can walk away. The float switch handles it. So, but if you don't have that equipment and you're not set up to do it, batch sparging is a good option, and it's plenty efficient in order to get you into that range of what we're talking about in the, you know, 65% to 80% range. I think that's not a problem at all.
Yeah, that's true. as you're saying, the word separation is a very significant factor in your mash efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do an exemplary mash, but if you're only draining the wort through a single hole in the side of the cooler, you're only going to get about 50% to 60% efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Because flow converges to the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you picture, and I've got pictures of this in How to Brew in the appendix, and this is what I learned when I was doing my corn cob studies in the aquarium with lots of different manifolds. You can actually watch the dye. I'd fill up the cooler with a corn cob media, which is very similar in size to a grain bed. And then I'd fill it up with water, and then I'd pour in, half a bottle of red or green food coloring. And then I'd open up the outlet on my manifold or false bottom, whatever I was using for a sparging mechanism. And you could watch the dye move through the grain bed, down the glass walls of the aquarium, and you could see it converge to the pipe or to multiple pipes. If I was running two pipes, you could see it converge to each pipe. And in between the pipes, there is a dead zone. I mean, there would be no dye moving into that area, which means that there is no wort or no sugar moving out of that area to the manifold.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're using a single pipe manifold or like a stainless steel screen that runs down the center of the lauter tun, and you're fly sparging,
mm-hmm.
you're going to end up with significant amount of dead zones along the sides of the cooler,
mm-hmm.
where there's no flow, from there to the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that liquid's just sitting there, and all your flow, all your lautering, you can keep sparging, adding more water, and it's just only going to rinse the center portion of the grain bed.
All right. So not as big a problem on the batch sparging, which is one of the great things about batch sparging. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's get more into the mechanics of getting the sugars out of the mash. Back after this.
Keep your carboy cap on.
This is Brew Strong.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
BN Army members, are you looking for an even better deal on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. NicoBrew.com will be running their biggest sale on hops yet, with 19 varieties for only $19 or less per pound. Varieties like Cascade, Centennial, Willamette, and more. The sale begins October 11th and runs through the 29th. Be sure to use coupon code BNARMY to get these awesome prices, whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag. All hops are shipped vacuum sealed and frozen straight to you. And $5 flat rate shipping includes all 50 states. And for hops, that means you too, Alaska and Hawaii. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. Remember coupon code BNARMY for the Brewing Network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's NikoBrew.com. NicoBrew.com, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, so we're talking the actual physical part of mash efficiency now, right? So we've kind of gone through some of the biochemical stuff and particle size. Now, what about getting the, let's say you've effectively converted the grains over to the sugars. Now, a big part of it is getting those sugars out of the mash tun into your kettle without adding a whole bunch of water to it either. But
right.
The thing is, I think people are confused on this point. You could add 2 gallons of water, or you could end up with 2 gallons in your brew kettle. You could end up with 1,000 gallons in your brew kettle. Efficiency doesn't change, right? Efficiency could change. If you're rinsing a whole bunch, certainly you're more effective at rinsing. But the efficiency the amount of sugars in there are the efficiency. It doesn't matter what the volume is. It's the total number of sugar molecules, let's say, in and other soluble materials in the liquid. That's what your efficiency is. So if you're, you know, the efficiency isn't related to volume other than you use that to calculate the total number of sugars you got out of your mash. Correct?
Correct. The caveat to that or the exception is that if you have to collect twice as much wort to get out, you know, to make a 1060 beer, if you've got to collect and boil down 8 gallons,
if you got to boil for 6 hours,
that's
a problem.
It is,
right,
and that's what we're trying to address tonight. Is, you know, if you want to design your equipment efficiency, your watering efficiency, so that you don't have to boil for hours to get that 60 points out.
Mm-hmm.
You should. I mean, the gravity of a first runnings is about 1077.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're brewing anything, you know, if you're brewing a beer that has an OG of anything less than 1077, you know, you've only got to collect so much wort and then basically dilute it to get your gravity.
Mm-hmm.
But if your lautering efficiency isn't good, first runnings is going to be, you know, made up of more water than sugar, and you know if your first runnings is only like 1040 or 1050, that indicates that you're not collecting all the sugar you should be from your grain bed.
Mm-hmm.
So, going back to, you know, the aquarium model, I learned that to get good extraction, you've got to cover the majority of the floor of your mash tun uniformly. If you're using a manifold, slotted pipe manifold, the more pipes you put in, the more uniform that collection is going to be, the more it's really going to emulate a false bottom. And the more uniformly you will rinse the sugars from the grain bed, and you know your efficiency will be better. You'll get that 1077 first runnings out of there. If you're doing a single pipe and fly sparging, that's when flow converges and you end up not rinsing and not extracting from large areas of the grain bed. Now, if you're batch sparging, as we were saying, what you need to do is drain the grain bed completely, and then you will get flow. The flow will converge, but it'll converge from all areas mm-hmm. of that grain bed to the drain.
But it has to be complete.
It has to be complete.
You're going to leave a lot of the sugars behind, and when you add more water, you're really impacting your efficiency there.
Yeah.
The potential benefit of batch sparging.
Yeah. I've batch sparged quite a bit in coolers and so on. And one thing that's difficult to gauge is, how well did I drain this mash tun? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look in your boil kettle and say, okay, that looks like about 3 gallons or so, or, whatever a bunch of looks like, but mm-hmm. unless you've got, a sight glass on your mash tun or some sort of measurement device in your kettle to know how much volume you've got, you may be leaving a significant amount of wort behind. Now when you add your next batch of water, you're diluting that.
The sugars that you should have gotten out, that wort.
The first time.
Rich wort that you should have gotten out. Well, and the other thing is, when you completely drain the bed, I mean, everything packs down, and it can make it harder to extract more liquid out of it.
Right.
It really, it can take a long time. You have to wait to really fully drain it. And then, when you see, I'm lazy. I don't have time, and I'm impatient, so I don't have time to wait for that. And then you've got to add your water, and so you really should make sure you fully drained it. Then you add your water back for your second batch sparge, and you need to really thoroughly mix that throughout and recirculate again and set up the grain bed again in order to do your second runnings, right?
Right. That's why a relatively coarse crush when you're batch sparging is really useful, because mm-hmm. it allows that grain bed to drain more easily.
Mm-hmm.
Or adding rice hulls to the grain bed, I mean, will help it drain more easily and speed up the process.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a fine crush, it can take hours for that to drain.
Right. Or you're leaving efficiency behind.
Right.
And you're leaving efficiency behind on the very best of the runnings, if you ask me. That's right. Those first runnings are really the ideal runnings that you want in your beer. But still, I would say, am I off on this? If you have a manifold, if you do not have a false bottom or a very extensive manifold, you're better off batch sparging, most likely, than you are fly sparging.
That's right. Because you can, if you're fly sparging with a single tube or just a double manifold or something, it really doesn't cover the floor very well. You're going to end up not rinsing and not collecting from significant portions of the grain bed. It's only when you fully drain that grain bed that you're going to get those sugars out of the corners. Mm-hmm. So, if you've got that kind of collection system, then you really need to batch sparge. But again, what I'm saying is you really need to drain that grain bed to get all the wort out. That could be our friend's problem, is that he may not be able to gauge how well he drained the grain bed before filling it up again
mm-hmm.
and leaving extract behind that way.
Right.
Another aspect is the way the lautering system, the wort collection system, is designed itself. A manifold, a slotted pipe manifold, depends on the resistance to flow of the wort into the tube being greater than the resistance to flow along the length of the tube. So, in other words, it'd be very easy for the liquid to just enter the tube right close where it exits the cooler, you know, right next to the outlet, and drain from only that point. If you've got a variation in resistance, so that it's just easier for the wort to flow in at that point, close the outlet, and be gone, and you won't get any flow from the back. That would result in very poor efficiency. If you've got these slots spaced well, and it drains uniformly along that tube, then you collect along the length of the whole tube. And I could see that in my aquarium experiments. I was using typical half-inch copper pipe that we all get at Home Depot, and I was putting hacksaw cuts into it every half inch, cutting halfway through the tube. And I would collect along the entire length of the tube. You could look on the aquarium wall and see a very flat dye gradient. So I could tell that I was collecting everywhere. But if I made those slots too large and made it too easy for the wort to flow in, then I started to see a decrease at the back end of the tube versus the front end. And with the stainless steel braid, that can be a factor. If the braid gets opened up a little bit, close to the outlet, it could be easier for flow to occur there than at the back of the braid, and he could be losing efficiency that way.
So consistency in the openings in whatever manifold
uniformity.
It needs to be perfectly uniform and not too large that it allows easy egress of the liquid, right?
Right.
And those factors are critical, but again, even so, maybe the easier thing is, if you're going to use that kind of device, then you need to batch sparge.
That's true.
Okay.
Another interesting aspect I learned was, I had a Sankey keg that I was using as a mash tun, and you got that nice domed bottom in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was putting a manifold across the that dome bottom. And so, the bottom of the keg was 2 inches below the manifold in the center. And I wondered to myself, well, am I collecting below the manifold? Am I getting the wort that's down the bottom, or is it just coming from on top?
Mm-hmm.
So I positioned a pipe in the aquarium, an inch off the bottom, and then watched how the dye moved down into the grade bed. And lo and behold, it doesn't flow beneath the manifold. It only goes down to that level and then
wherever
exits.
wherever the tubing is at.
Yeah.
Doesn't go any lower than that.
So you're never collecting from beneath the manifold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say if you're using a manifold, turn the slots down, because that effectively lowers them as low as they can get.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got an inch, or if you're an inch off the bottom with your collection device, whether it's braid or manifold, you're really not going to collect from beneath it unless you're completely draining.
Now, what about on false bottom? You have a false bottom that's an inch and a half off the floor of the vessel. Are you collecting mm-hmm. completely from underneath that false bottom, or are there still dead areas underneath the false bottom that you're not collecting?
There will be a dead area below your outlet tube, your pickup tube.
Mm-hmm. So you want your pickup to be on the bottom.
Yeah, you want it as low as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way you'll collect everything. I mean, that is the benefit of a false bottom, is that you're going to get uniform collection across the entire floor area, but depending on how high that false bottom is off the bottom, or the difference in height between the false bottom to your pickup tube, mm-hmm. you're going to see convergence of flow again.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that dip, get that pickup tube as low as you can, and then you'll collect everywhere.
Okay.
Uniformly across that false bottom.
Is that the way they say when, you know, gee, this mash is hot and deep too, right? When they're talking about the pickup tube?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else we should think about when we're getting these sugars out? I mean, does time have a big factor in this? Probably,
well,
you know.
Time is a result.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're doing everything right, it will take less time. The more you're off, you know, the optimum for each of the factors, whether it's, you know, mash temperature, mash chemistry, mash pH, it's going to take longer for conversion. And from the biochemical side, with regard to the physical side, the more inefficient your lautering system is, the longer it can take to collect the wort from it. If you're doing a single point collection point, you know, just a hole in the side of the cooler, and batch sparging, it's going to take longer to drain that wort from through that hole than if you had a false bottom under it or a well distributed manifold to drain that. The more you optimize the fractors up front, the less time the whole process will take.
Okay, so the more ideal the equipment you have configured, the faster you can run your wort out. So theoretically, I guess maybe with a mash that's spread out really thin, and you know, the perfect false bottom, you could totally just drain this thing in a heartbeat, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the limit of it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
for the same efficiency, the more you have your upfront factors optimized, the shorter time it'll take to hit that efficiency.
Okay. All right, let's take a short break, and when we come back, maybe you can wrap up any other thoughts you have on this that we haven't covered, and we can get some questions done in the chat room. Back after this.
Sounds good.
Smart. Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
In the past year, the Brewing Network has been able to add two new shows, expand our studio capabilities and quality, and bring more beer information home to you than ever before. In no small part, this is due to subscribers like you. Thank you from all of us at the Brewing Network. Without your monthly support of any denomination, we could not bring you the very best in live beer radio like Can You Brew It?, Brew Strong, and The Sunday Session. Haven't signed up yet? Join your fellow brewers in the BN Army. Sign up today at thebrewingnetwork.com for a recurring donation as little as $2 a month. Besides all the great live radio you'll support, every subscriber is automatically entered in monthly raffles for amazing brew gear like a conical fermenter, a temperature control system, or your own draft setup. Become a part of the BN Army today.
This www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're talking dialing in your mash efficiency. So did you have any other things you wanted to cover before we go to the chat room?
Well, no, I hope I'm making sense with everything. I tend to get wrapped up around the axle on this stuff. I think the one point I was trying to make before the break was that time is not a factor of it in and of itself. It's a result of the other factors.
Of the equipment, so, of the crush, of the process in general, of the
chemistry and
chemistry,
all that.
The recipe, a lot of factors, valving, tubing, the height of the drop.
Right. And I guess one aspect we didn't touch on very much was there's both a rinsing of the grain bed and there's a leaching of the sugars from the grain.
Mm-hmm.
Two things going on. I mean, when you're batch sparging, you're really just draining the grain bed. When you refill, now you've got
chance to leach those sugars out of the
out of the particles, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, you need to give that some time.
Well, I think that's where the time factor comes in also on fly sparging.
Yeah.
If you go too quickly, you're not going to properly leach those sugars out of the grains. So
yeah.
You go and you do a little bit better. I've always found that if I slow my flow rate down, I get a higher efficiency.
Yep, me too. About a quart per minute is one number that gets tossed out frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, yeah, don't – if you rush the sparge, you're probably going to end up leaving sugars behind and just collecting water.
And better chance of channeling, better chance of compacting the grain bed. Take your time. Slow it down. You're in no hurry. Have a home brew. No, don't drink home brew while you're brewing. Just makes it. Every time I get drinking when I'm brewing, it just never turns. I totally lose track of what I'm doing.
That happens to me too. But yeah,
it still turns out to be good beer. But hey, yeah. All right. So how are we doing in the chat room, Justin? We got some questions. You know, you guys can listen live and participate and ask questions.
I just say that all that happens to me when I drink and brew too, except for the beer still turns out good part.
Still turns out crappy?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm on a second glass of your Mirror Pond Pale Ale clone.
I know, because I purposely put nothing else on tap.
Right, that's true. It's like, well, what beer do you have on, Justin? Well, I got Mirror Pond clone.
Yeah.
No, what good beer do you have on, Justin? No, it's actually quite good. And you can listen to the Mirror Pond Clone Show, Can You Brew It, Jamel Show, alternate Mondays from this show, this fine show, and there's some good stuff on there, too.
See, I figured this way I could tell people without lying. You know, Jamil went back for a second pint of my pale ale.
Had a choice of drinking nothing or drinking my beer, and he decided to drink my beer. All right.
Yeah.
That's high praise indeed.
All right. A couple good questions from the chat room today. Two Dogs is in there, and he's got a good question for you. He's got a new Gravity Brew sculpture, and his first batch on the system was a new process for him, and he ended up with a calculated efficiency of 88%, and he wants to be shooting for around 70, like you've suggested. So his question is, how do I adjust the efficiency down instead of up?
Coarse crusher.
Crush, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of the key things. But John, go over how people should be calculating their efficiency. And one of the things that I'll throw in before you even start is you need to very, very accurately measure the volume of wort you've collected in the kettle.
That's the key.
If you cannot just totally accurately measure that, forget about it. You don't know what your efficiency is. Guessing at how many gallons you have, going off some marker on the outside, if you've not calibrated some measurement stick very precisely for your kettle, you don't know what your efficiency is.
I'm really glad you're saying this. I'm estimating all the time.
Yeah. But that
with a marker, though. I mean, I consider it an educated guess, but you're right. It's not exact. I just have that mark.
Yeah. But if you know what your pre-boil gravity is and you have a fair idea what the volume is, and your efficiency somewhere in the ballpark of where you want to be, that's all you really need to know. You know, the reason you need to know your pre-boil gravity and the approximate volume is for hop utilization, bittering additions, things like that. You may need to adjust those if you have more volume than or less volume than you should.
Okay.
Right.
And you need to know your pre-boil gravity so you can adjust, you know, with a DME or something like that if you're too short, or add some water if you're too high. If you add some water, then your volume is more. And, you know, again, you want to add more hops. You're going to need to increase your bittering additions, your aroma and flavor additions, because they'll all be diluted. You may end up with more wort at the end. That's okay. You can throw it away. You can put it in a second fermenter, whatever you might do. But you need to know what that is. So, sorry, John. You know, I get these things and I start rambling on. Tell us how to calculate the efficiency.
Okay. You got to know how much volume you're collecting, and you need to measure the gravity of what you've collected. So, as you're collecting your runnings, when you've collected 7 gallons or whatever that you're going to boil, take the gravity of it and then multiply out the points and divide by the weight of grain that you used. And that's, you know, that's your 28, 30 points per pound per gallon.
Well, and you have to calculate what the potential was of your recipe, because you have different grains, and you could ballpark it just against
assuming the same,
all the way across. It tends to vary, but things like
chocolate malt, black malt.
But you could calculate that out as well if you want to get some precision in there.
Right. But it comes down to calculating exactly how much volume you have, how much gravity you've collected, divided by the weight of grain that you used. And there's nothing really wrong with getting a good efficiency out if you've done if you've optimized your process. If you're sparging slowly and you're not collecting too much wort to get that 88% efficiency. I mean, if you're, for a 5-gallon batch, if you've collected 10 gallons of wort and boil it down and you say, okay, I collected, all these gravity points, and it works out to 88% efficiency. Well, that's too much work, and you've really probably compromised the quality of the wort mm-hmm. by getting that high efficiency. But if you only need to collect 7 gallons to boil down to 5, and you're getting that 88, then you're probably doing well.
Well, and anytime somebody tells me they got an efficiency around 90%, I start to think either they're crushing too fine or they're not measuring their volume correctly and they're not quite got the right calculation. So
yeah,
that's the possibilities there. So, did we solve the problem for Biz about...
I don't think we did. I think there's one aspect that... Maybe we should line up the uh-huh. different factors that could be affecting his situation.
Okay.
He's got a stainless steel braid running down the middle of a 48 quart rectangular cooler.
Right.
He's batch sparging. But I noticed in the pictures that he posted to the Brewing Network forum that the pickup is about an inch off the bottom. So, you know, in other words, you have a braid that has... the flow has access an inch off the bottom to the outlet.
Let me tell you what I learned from what you said earlier. He's got an inch of liquid across the surface area of this 48 quart cooler that's not getting picked up. It is below the braid, and anything below your pickup does not go through the pickup. And that's what you were saying earlier, right?
That's right.
See,
that's
I pay right. attention to you, John. I really do.
And you state it better than I do, too.
I learn things from you. All right. Okay.
Yeah, so that's wort he's leaving behind, and that could be the source of the 60% efficiency instead
right,
of 70.
Right there, I bet you he picks up another 10% and ends up at 70.
Yep.
Yeah.
What he should do is, you know, get a solid copper extension to get that, you know, to go from the pickup point down to the
bottom.
And across, right. And then attaches his braid to that, and I think he'll see a considerable increase.
Come out with a 45 and down, and then
yeah,
across. Uh-huh. Okay, great. Problem solved. All right.
Yep. All right. Another good question came through the chat. You guys are always talking about a good crush. Mm-hmm. Well, what is a good crush? Can you define that for us? Make it clear as day.
All right, so an ideal crush is all the husk is completely intact. It doesn't get broken up at all. It looks like, oh, there's a whole grain, and it hasn't been touched. And then you kind of wiggle it in your fingers, and you look inside, and the endosperm, all that starchy material in the middle, is all just broken up into, fine particles. That's the ideal crush, that the outside husk is untouched, and when you go and you roll it between your fingers, it's almost powder that comes out from in between. Now, that's not realistic, but you can do things like wet down the grains to keep that husk intact, or just crush a little more gently, and what you get is bigger chunks inside. But again, for me, keeping that husk intact is a big part of beer quality, wort quality and beer quality. So that's a big thing for me. If you're crushing your grain and you see a lot of husks all broken up into little bits, that's too tight a crush in my book. John, you have a different interpretation, or
no? That's it. You want? I think coffee is a good analogy or a good measure.
Of the bits, the starchy yeah. bits inside the husk. And again, yeah. that husk needs to remain intact as much as possible. If you can keep yeah. them all perfectly intact, you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah. A lot of people, when they get their first roller mill, you know, crank it down and they go for a really fine crush. And, maybe their husks are all intact, but they're going to have trouble lautering. They're going to have, trouble draining. It's going to go real slowly, get a stuck sparge. You need a distribution of grain, of particle sizes to get good flow. You need the fines for good conversion. You need the coarse ones for good, to keep that grain bed looser and you know, not less compact. So you want particle sizes anywhere from, you know, coarse ground coffee to fine ground coffee, to, you know, with the husks intact, as you say. If you're having lottering problems, if you're batch sparging or you're fly sparging, doesn't matter. If you're having trouble getting the wort out of the grain bed, then add rice hulls. You know,
so let's compare this to crack cocaine. Compare this to an 8-ball.
170 bucks. Oh, sorry.
What kind of a grind are we talking there? No. I'm sorry.
I do. So I think I know the answer to this question, but I saw it come up in the chat earlier. Does the same go for batch sparging? Because someone thought maybe you were saying you could crush to a powder if you're batch sparging.
No, you really can't. That's something that somebody claimed on the interweb that, you could go really fine on a batch sparge, but there's reasons why you can't. You're going to get more absorption. You're going to get, you can get things just locked down. I think it's about the same between fly sparging and batch sparging. I don't think that's really an advantage of batch sparging.
I think you need exactly the same crush for either method. You need that distribution of particles, you need to add tons of rice hulls.
And again, the thing for me is you got to be careful about crushing up those husks too much. I tend towards a fairly gentle crush that matter inside needs to be all broken up, but the husks should be intact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I had from the chat today, guys.
All right. Well, John, you want to wrap up for us? You want to recap mash efficiency?
Okay. Mash efficiency, we're always talking about the maximum soluble extract as determined in a laboratory. They're crushing the stuff to powder. They're running it through some coffee filters over a long period of time. I'm talking, 2 or 3 hours into a beaker to get the maximum soluble extract out of that bit of grain. And that's going to be about 37 points per pound per gallon. When we're brewing with our distribution of particle sizes, we're looking for an efficiency of anywhere from 70 to 80%, even 65%. What you're getting there is you're getting ease of processing. It doesn't take as long to drain the wort from the grain bed with the coarser crush size. You need to be aware that there's an enzymatic conversion, the biochemical end, and there's the physical end, wort separation. And we talked a lot today about wort separation because that can be a very big factor in your mash efficiency, in the wort you collect. You can end up collecting mostly water if your lautering system is not separating the wort well. And anything I missed there, Jamil?
No, I think that recaps it quite well. Okay. All right, good show, John. I think your extensive experimentation and knowledge shows on this one.
Thank you.
All right, so if you get a chance, go check out our good sponsor, More Beer, morebeer.com. Tell them we sent you. Tell them you like them sponsoring the show and making this show happen. Send them an email, and better yet, buy something from them. If you're in the mood of buying some cool brew gear, go to the Brewing Network store. You pick up John's How to Brew or John and my Brewing Classic Styles. You get them all signed. Only through the Brewing Network are they signed. So pick them up here, and you can get shirts, glasses, hats. There's some special GABF hop grenade shirts that are going to be appearing in the store shortly. Make sure you check that out because all this stuff sells quickly. All of it goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network, and all that keeps this programming going. So,
and I need an 8-ball.
He needs an 8-ball. I shouldn't have mentioned it, man. He's already got that look in his eye.
Yeah.
Bang.
Ready to cut you.
All right. And I don't know. What else? It's one of those days.
Bruce Strong, everybody. See you. Bye.
No. Well, and, And oh, yeah, Bruce Strong. Until then, Bruce Strong, have a Merry Christmas.
Yes. Bruce Strong, everybody.